from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here on the Michigan Talk Network all over the world via our website, wildmichiganradio.com. And, of course, wherever you catch us on affiliate or podcast, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street 127 in Mason. Check out their auctions online. Check out their store if you can make it. And wherever you're listening to the show, just know that they can ship what you buy. They do all the paperwork and all, make sure everything is legal to get to where you are at. And you can purchase online at notjustguns.com. Same thing goes for Conquest Sense. If you need VS1, you need Evercalm or any of the other fine products that they sell, go online to conquestsense.com. There's a link on our website at wildmichiganradio.com, and they can ship just like that, whether it's jerky or deer sticks or a sense in a stick, they are able to get that out to you. So thanks so much to them for helping us stay on another year. And man, oh man, time flies because we've been doing this. This will be our 16th year coming up on September 30th. That is the day we started 16 years ago. And our first guest on the show today, he's been in the outdoors a little bit, and we're going to be talking right now to Richard P. Smith. And Richard, I'm not sure who your publicist is, but we've got the news release about the brand new book, eighth book of Deer Tales, Great Michigan Deer Tales, is out. But I'm a little concerned. There might be some misinformation in your bio. It says the UP hunter who is over 90 years old. No.
Yeah.
Come on. Richard, how are you?
Fine. How are you?
wait. Over 90? What did I miss here?
Well, the hunter in one of the chapters, who is one of the most successful hunters, deer hunters in the state, is 91 years old now.
Wow.
But I interviewed him a couple years ago to tap into some of his knowledge. He took bucks 70 years in a row, and some years took two bucks during those 70 years. So he's been very, very successful, and he had a lot of knowledge to share, and that's covered in one of the chapters in this new book. It's a UP resident. He lives in Delta County. He's done his deer, all of his deer hunting in Delta County in the UP.
Wow. That's you know what? That's amazing. My dad, who will be 80 in November, is like a 60-year-old, maybe less. I mean, but so I can see that, I guess, when you're active, especially in the outdoors, there's a lot of physical ability that goes into going out hunting. And if you're successful 70 years in a row, that's an amazing story in itself.
Yeah, he's taken more than 100 deer during his lifetime in the UP.
That's incredible. So you've already done 1 through 7. We are now on book 8. This has a couple of extra chapters. Can you give us a little bit of an idea as to what we can find in this one?
Well, more stories about the biggest bucks taken in Michigan. Many of the bucks covered are of Boone and Crockett caliber antlers, huge racks, some of the biggest racks in the state. But not all of the chapters deal with the biggest bucks. There's one chapter about a UP hunter who snow tracked a 4.5-year-old buck with a big set of antlers that he was successful on. And he also stalked a 5.5-year-old buck with bow and arrow in the UP that he was able to take. It's the chapter's Freelancing for UP Bucks. This hunter does not like hunting over bait like most hunters do. He relies on other tactics. All of these chapters in this book has at least one important lesson, and sometimes more than one lesson, that any hunter can apply to their hunting. And they're entertaining reading as well.
That's fantastic. Richard P. Smith joins us here on the Conquest Sense Hotline. Richard, I want to take a talk about the cover real quick. It's got this beautiful white-tailed buck stripping off his velvet, and it looks really, well, one side's very typical, but the other side looks very non-typical.
It is very non-typical. That antlers on that buck have more than 20 points, and if you count all the projections, even those less than an inch long, he's got more than 30 points. And this is the first book, Duran, in which the buck that's featured on the cover is covered in one of the chapters in the book.
Really?
This buck locked antlers with another big buck, and they ended up falling in a pond, and they both drowned.
No. Man, yeah. that's you don't want you know how it is. You hear those stories of the guys that and gals that have, you know, seen him on camera and have thousands of pictures, and they've been chasing this deer forever, and then they either one, it gets hit by a car, two, it ends up locked and drowned in a pond someplace, or somebody else gets it.
Yeah, that's common.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. I mean, you show no signs of slowing down, Richard, and that's fantastic. You said you recently had a couple of book signings at Jay's, and the book was barely, dry.
Yeah, we just picked it up. My wife and I picked it up from the printer, and we had signings scheduled ahead of time right afterward. So we did two book signings right after we picked it up.
Now, do you have plans now that we are a lot less involved in the pandemic than we were, because we know that really kind of, you know, put you on the shelf, pardon the pun, for a little while, for a couple of years for road tours. Do you see yourself getting back on the road to do book signings?
I think so. For this year, with the pandemic slowing down and hopefully over, I hope to do a book signing tour this December like I have in the past. And with the new book, it's a good time for it.
It is. And you know, we could all use, you know, some new faces to see. And yeah. Yours, and yours, of course, I mean, you know, we've always looked forward to seeing you at the shows and whatnot. And with the shows being scaled down or non-existent for the past couple of years, it's just really nice to see this. Now, you've authored, now this is your 30th book, correct?
Correct.
Wow.
It's kind of a milestone. When I wrote my first book, which was back in 1977, that was published in 1978, I swore that I wouldn't do another one because it was so much work, but that obviously changed.
That's fantastic. You know, this is the Great Michigan Great Michigan Deer Tales, Book 8, the 30th book from Richard P. Smith, a very well respected and awarded author, videographer, photographer up in Marquette area of Michigan's UP, and a longtime friend of the show here, Richard. And it's been so fun to learn from you, as I have on many occasions.
Well, that's great, and that's one of the reasons that why I write is to try and share knowledge with readers to help them learn about the outdoors like I've learned.
Yeah, you know what, and you know, you literally have walked with the whitetails up there in your area with bears and whatnot. Your knowledge has come firsthand, and it's not always ever been the safest thing.
No, but fortunately, I've not had any serious injuries as a result. Learning how to read bears and understand their behavior and their warning signs is an important part of avoiding major problems with bears and deer.
Absolutely. We're going to talk more with Richard here coming up in the next segment. We want to talk a little bit about bears. We've got season coming up, and he has taught us how to field judge black bears, too. So we're going to talk about that. And an incident that Richard shared with me off air that we're going to share on air about a bear kind of attack up in the UP. So all that's coming your way. Richard, if you don't mind hanging on, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'll be glad to.
All right. If you'd like to order your own book, they're $18, includes the shipping. RichardPSmith.com. Smith Publications is putting that out. Richard and his wife, Lucy, such great people, man. Love talking with Richard. He's a wealth of information. We're going to find out more coming up the next segment, being brought to you by Conquest Sense. Find them online on our website, WildMichiganRadio.com.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at WildMichiganRadio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pulled tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here, being brought to you by Conquest Sense, makers of VS1, also the ever-popular Evercalm. And we have some new products coming your way that we'll talk about as soon as we are able to, and we know all about it. And we think you should, too. So we'll get with Doug Roberts and find out when we can talk about it. So until then, I get to sit on information and try and stay tight-lipped about it. Richard P. Smith is joining us. He has authored his 30th book, which is called Great Michigan Deer Tales, book number 8. Richard, you got a very interesting segment in here about whitetails that were taken in velvet. Beautiful trophies in velvet here in Michigan. There's a gentleman with the cactus buck with a beautiful drop tine on it, and a 14-year-old girl that took a monster in 2011 scored 185 and 7/8. And where do you go from there?
Yeah, that's one of the things I try and include in these books is unique things like that where some unusual bucks, like these bucks still in velvet. All three velvet antlered bucks that are covered in that chapter are cactus bucks, meaning they had either no testicles or damage to their testicles, reducing the testosterone level, which controls velvet shedding. So these bucks continued to grow their antlers and didn't shed their antlers like normal.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, you know, it's just when you see a velvet buck like that in October, like one of these were taken, you really wonder, and then that's why. I mean, it just nature doing its thing and us capitalizing on it, I guess.
Exactly.
Also, you wanted to mention too that Schuler Books has your books in stock.
Yes, Schuler Books at the Meridian Mall in Okemos. That was one of the first places my wife and I delivered books after we picked them up from the printer.
Awesome.
So they have a supply of the new book, and they have all my books, in fact, in the store.
Awesome. That's fantastic, especially for those of us around the Lansing area. Mm-hmm. Schuler Books in the Meridian Mall is still a great place to go for books. Richard has his books there. Videos, field judging black bear. Now, real quickly, before we delve into this part that you know where you've taught us about black bear, you said there was like a fish jacking up in Delta County.
Yeah. there was a 82-year-old fisherman who was out brook trout fishing. He had caught a half a dozen brook trout or whatever it was, and at the end of the day, he was putting the brook trout he caught in a plastic bag in his side-by-side, and a black bear came up behind him and knocked him down to get at the fish. Unfortunately, when he fell, he hit his head on a rock and knocked him unconscious. When he woke up, his hand was bloody that he had was holding the fish in, and the fish were gone. The bear was obviously hungry.
Apparently. Yeah. If he'd have asked politely, you know, I think I would have just said, hey, sure, not a problem. but just to come up behind an 8-year-old guy like that and just knock him over and take his fish, what is this world coming to?
I know. Unfortunately, the guy suffered the most serious injury from the fall. He hit his head on a rock and fractured a vertebrae in his neck. The bear didn't do any serious damage. It scratched his hand and arm to get at the fish. It's unfortunate he hit his head on a rock.
Yeah, it must have been some death grip on the fish is probably why the bear bought it at so hard.
Well, it was total surprise. He had no idea what was about to happen.
Wow, that's just crazy. So, again, you know, from and the thing is, too, we've seen bear down in our area. So, I mean, they have this tendency to be rather migratory, especially young males that are just looking for their own place.
Exactly. When males are over a year and a half old, they disperse from their mother's home range to avoid inbreeding. And sometimes they cover hundreds of miles looking for a place that isn't occupied by older males that would compete with them. And they're expanding their range in Michigan. We're having more bears in the southern part of the state than ever before. And they're increasing numbers throughout the state, including the UP. We've got plenty of bears.
Well, that's fantastic because, you know, and the thing is, too, it doesn't take much for habitat for them. You know, I mean, just like anything else, it needs place to sleep, food, water, you know.
Yeah, and they're very adaptable. They can adapt well to being around people, and they become primarily nocturnal to avoid people.
You've had some very close encounters with black bears here in Michigan yourself.
Yeah, real close.
My closest was about 15 yards when it was, you know, there was a big, about 300-pound black bear on a bait pile that I was going in to hunt over. And, you know, I took my shot, and we all know the story. My sight was loose, and I missed three times. But, hey, I got to be that close to a black bear in Michigan.
I actually had one time I had a bear with his mouth on the toe of my boot about ready to bite down. This was years ago when open pit dumps were common in the UP, and bears gravitated to these dumps, and I would go there to photograph them. One time I had a yearling bear that came up to me, and he smelled something on my boot and was about ready to bite, and I said, "No, don't you do that." And that worked. He backed off. Fortunately, he didn't bite down.
Yeah, you know, and that's the beauty of black bears, too. I mean, you have a very, very good chance of making your presence known, making yourself look bigger to scare them off. If it's a sow with cubs, I would not try that. I'd just slowly back away.
Well, interestingly, the bears that I've walked with are females that every other year had cubs with them. But once they learn that you're not a threat to them or their cubs, there's no problem.
Wow.
It's the situation when you catch them by surprise, when you get between them and their cubs, and mm-hmm. they don't know you're not a threat, that it's a problem. 2 years ago, there was a UP resident in Crystal Falls, had a sow with two yearlings at his bird feeder, and he saw this was after dark, he saw the female walk off, and he thought she was gone. One of her yearlings was still damaging the bird feeder, so he went out on his deck to holler at the yearling, but unbeknownst to him, the female was just to the right in the shadows.
Oh, boy.
She nailed him. Fortunately, his wife was able to pull him back in the house before he got seriously hurt.
Wow, that's amazing. And, you know, the thing is, too, if you've ever hunted black bear or been a, they're just so quiet. They don't have the best eyesight, but their olfactory system, their hearing, amazing. Absolutely
exactly.
Amazing. Yeah, it's can be scary business. But anyway, the book is Great Michigan Deer Tales, the 30th book in Richard's great career of writing. Richard, we thank you so much for everything you've shared. The 8th in this series. Any plans on anything for the next book?
Well, I'm almost done with the next one.
See, already the Baskin Robbins of bookmaking. you'll be at 31, which would be fantastic.
Yeah, this is on a different subject than hunting, and you'll get a copy when it's ready.
Well, good, and we'll have a conversation, I hope, as well.
Yeah.
Well, and until then, go to Schuler Books if you're in the Lansing area. Schuler Books in the Meridian Mall. Find them at richardpsmith.com. Definitely one of our favorite people here on the show and a fantastic award-winning Michigan author, photographer, videographer. Richard, our best to you and Lucy up there, and good luck deer hunting this year.
Thank you, and best of luck to you this fall also.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you joining us.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an hour to time, Interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here. Thanks to Richard P. Smith for joining us. 30 books, already has number 31 about done. He is the Baskin Robbins of authors. I'm telling you. We are being brought to you by our friends at Not Just Guns. Happy to have them on board again, man. NotJustGuns.com. Check them out. Look for your everyday carry stuff. Maybe you're looking for some knives. Maybe you're looking for ammunition, reloading stuff. Whatever you need, Not Just Guns has it. And you want to build your own AR platform firearm, they can help you do that too. So check them out, notjustguns.com, and they are helping us stay on the air for you today. Wild Michigan is our name. I'm Duran Martinez. David A. Rose Sudsy is joining us right now, and we're not going to go into detail, but David, how are you, sir?
You know, I'm good. I had a wonderful week last week. I was up in the Canadian bush. I was up in the Arctic watershed catching pike and walleye on a fly-in trip. So, you know, it was kind of nice to get back to normal and be one with Mother Nature in the middle of it all.
That's pretty cool. I've never done the fly-in. I've hunted and I fished Canada like a lot of people in Michigan do, because they're our neighbors, or across the tunnel or over the bridge into the northern portion of our state. But we are so lucky to have access to that. But when you take that fly-in trip, that's a completely different thing. I mean, that's a whole other world when you get flown in.
Yeah, you know, it is. I mean, you have to really watch what you're taking. You're only allowed, you know, especially with gas prices and, you know, for those de Havilland Beavers and stuff like that, they get, what, you know, half a mile to the gallon kind of thing. And, yeah, you have to – they weigh you, and then you're – I mean, you're allowed – what was it? 300 pounds total, including yourself. And then they're going to start giving you a surcharge. So you really have – number one, you need to go on a diet before you go. And then number two, yeah, you really got to – pay attention to what you're taking. You are in the middle of nowhere, so you want everything, but at the same time, you can only take so much. So it's a really unique experience. It makes you think.
See, it does. It just made me think, because right now I'm a human surcharge, and if I take anything, well, it's going to get expensive.
Yeah, it's 75 cents a pound after that. So basically, just give yourself a dollar a pound, because you're going to tip the guy too. So hey, a dollar a pound, everything over 300 pounds, it can get costly, but at the same time, when you do it right, it's all part of the experience, and it's a great thing.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to do like I did here a few years ago and lose the weight, so I won't start the trip off in the hole. And you've got to be feeling good about yourself, because you've already done that. You've taken like
you know,
a whole surcharge
you know,
off
back
of.
In two I did. I actually, you know, it at one time I would have been over the allotted amount of weight just in myself, and now I'm not. Yeah, I lost 130 pounds in 1 year back in 2018. You know, I bounced back and forth between 20 pounds here and 20 pounds off and 20 pounds here and 20. So, you know, I'm at that stage where I'm. But yeah, it's amazing. In fact, I took a picture and I was going to post it on social media. You know, flying in is a lot easier as a smaller person, because I actually fit in the seat better, you know, in these tiny airplanes that are landing on the water.
No, I get it, man. And if you've ever, and I'm going to say this from personal experience, because I did that whole thing. I misplaced the 100 pounds and then I found it again. So, you know, but it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of time to take it off. I'm back down 13 pounds now, which I'm really happy about. My wife and I are just,
nice.
We have changed everything again, and you know we cook at home, we eat at home, we you know, all of these things we've changed. So, look, if you're going through it, you're not going through it alone. You can always contact me about this stuff, too. We're not using any fancy anything. We've just done this change. And believe me, in that month that we've done this change, it's just so much better. Everything's so much better. But
oh, it is. And it's one of the great things about being a sportsman here in Michigan. I mean, obviously, we can deer hunt, we can turkey hunt, we can catch fish, and we can get some of the healthiest food on the planet without having to go to the grocery store. Yes, I mean, it's expensive to fish, and nowadays with gas prices and this and that and everything else, but you're getting the healthiest food, and that's one of the great things about being a hunter and angler in Michigan is, you know, we have the resource to eat some of the best food on the planet.
And if you like fish, especially if you're like a pescatarian, this is the place to be, because right about now we've got salmon that are getting ready to start stacking up and head up the rivers. We had conversation last week that they're getting some of those fish up into the rivers now, and we have a cooler week coming in next week. Now, mind you, that's not going to do a lot for temperature change in the water, but it'll start that process.
Yeah, the process has actually been started pretty good. Here in the Traverse City area where I'm at, we've had 5.5 inches of rain in 6 days. I mean, we went from a drought, and what happens is, you know, you get these low-pressure systems, you get all that water running through, and there's actually a lot of salmon that have entered a lot of these rivers, the Big Manistee, all that kind of stuff, and these fish are hot. I mean, you hook one, you got to hang on for your dear life, because I'll tell you what, those fish are ticked. They were just in 200, 300 foot of water, and now they're in, you know, 5 foot of water in a river. And, yeah, they got all the gumption in the world. And what a great fight.
They are. They really are. And this early in the game, David, how are we, you know, what tactics are we using to fish for them?
You know, it's interesting. You know, when we're out there trolling and whatnot, we're using, you know, spoons. We're using J-plugs, you know, the body baits that waggle back and forth. And that same kind of stuff is still going to take fish. So, you know, big inline spinners, maybe a spoon. But, you know, a lot of lures, like I know, you know, the Storm lures and whatnot, these deep divers, bomber lures, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, these body baits, when you cast and retrieve, this is really what turns those fish on, and they will let you know. They will grab onto that lure, and you better have good hooks on, because it's going to be a fight.
Right. You might want to change out your hooks that come from the factory, unless they're putting on really good hooks to begin with, or make sure they're good and sharp, because you're definitely going to want to hang onto that fish. You know, you get into something, you know, anything from king, coho, steelhead, whatever, it's going to give you a run for your money.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. And what I do is I usually use the factory hooks, you know, that come with it right off the bat, but then I end up changing them out mid-year because, yeah, those salmon, I mean, they hit, they pull, you know, you're unhooking it, the hook can turn bad in no time. So, but, yeah, you replace your hooks with some good quality, you know, heavy-duty hooks and stuff like that. Make sure they're razor sharp. And it's amazing how many fish you can land in these river systems on these body baits.
David A. Rose is joining us here on the Conquest Sense Hotline up in the Traverse City area. He's an outdoor writer and avid angler. What's been your best? Let's talk real quickly. Best fish for you this year? And I gotta have an idea.
You know, the best. You know, walleye has been my. I've got, how's this? I was in Canada, and we buy the conservation license, meaning we only keep half as many, because I got a lot of fish in the freezer. I got a lot of walleye in the freezer. I try not to freeze too much fish too long, so walleye has been good for me. I was on the Detroit River this year. I was in the Saginaw River this year. I was up on Little Bay to Knock, and so, yeah, the walleye fishery has been good to me.
Good. That's fantastic. It's been good to everybody for quite some time now, and there's no sign of that in sight, which is fantastic. We're speaking right now with David A. Rose. We're going to talk more with David here in a few minutes. David, if you don't mind hanging on, we'd appreciate it.
My name.
We're going to see how the big lakes are going on right now and what to expect come fall, which is not that far away. I mean, what, we're almost halfway to September? I'm getting all bristled up thinking about it. It's Wild Michigan. We're being brought to you by Not Just Guns and Conquest Sense. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Happy to have you here. Happy to be anywhere. Being heard, whether it's on our podcast or our affiliates, we appreciate everybody checking in, and we are just moving through this this show today. First couple of segments was with Richard P. Smith, noted outdoor author. New book from Richard, book number 30, The Great Michigan Deer Tales, book number 8 is out. And, of course, another one on the way, another book, and we'll talk to Richard as soon as that one hits the press. But right now we are speaking to outdoor writer and all-around good guy, David A. Rose, right now. David, real quickly, we've dealt with this, I'm going to say the old way and now the new way, because we have to be correct about things. The Asian carp issue, as they did come from Asian territory, an invasive species now known as invasive carp. They're talking about finding them past the electric barrier now. And concern for the Great Lakes, which has always been there. First, we found DNA. Now we've actually had like one of the grass carp or the silver carp come through. But still, they say no need to panic just yet. And I'm not panicking because
right.
I'm still thinking that something will eat them in their smaller states.
Right. Those particular carp, they are plankton eaters at the moment. And when I say at the moment, I talk to biologists, and you remember Jurassic Park and how nature has a way to change and all that kind of stuff. Biologists feel that this could actually kind of happen with these carp. But right now, these particular carp you're talking about, they're plankton eaters. So they live in these muddier waters, dirtier waters, because they're able to filter all that plankton and stuff like that. So I could see it. I can see this being a problem maybe in the future, like in Saginaw Bay, the, Tittabawassee River, all that kind of stuff, where the water is not as crystal clear as it is here in the Traverse City area. Mm-hmm. I mean, we actually kind of have the opposite. We don't. The water is so clean and so neutral that we don't have a lot of that, plankton and stuff like that. So maybe the carp will move on through Lake Michigan, but they're going to get into those dirtier waters. Obviously, Lake Erie, any of these waters that are that have a lot of nutrients in them.
Yeah, I again, it's something that, we've been watching this since day one. This whole thing could have been pretty much prevented. Let's not use them first.
Oh, there's no doubt. Well, yeah. Well, and they were brought as a food source, in the southern states, and that's how this whole thing started. Is they were raising these fish in ponds, and then of course Mother Nature kicks in and the floods the rivers and floods this, and these fish get out. They mm-hmm. got out of their pens and they got into the Mississippi River, and now they're here. And unfortunately, Lake Michigan, for an example, I mean, all the Great Lakes, we're under siege when it comes to all these invasive species. I mean, anything from gobies to, quagga mussels, zebra mussels, this mussel, that mussel, spiny water fleas. There's going to be more to come, and it's an unfortunate situation, but it is it is drastically changing the Great Lakes and just the entire environment of it and the fishery.
David A. Rose is our guest here on the Conquest Sense Hotline. David, I always reference this. An old Michigan conservation magazine that I have references the alewives as an invasive species. That all of a sudden we're depending on this invasive species because they became a food source for our salmon.
Yeah, it was 1967. Before that, we didn't have salmon in the Great Lakes, and that was when the first run of coho came up the Platte River. We had all these you know, biologists and all that kind of stuff, you know, Tanner and all that, they figured out, hey, these are pelagic fish. And if you don't know what pelagic is, basically it means living in the upper echelons of the water column. So that's what Chinook are. Chinook depend on pelagic. Chinook are pelagic, and they depend on pelagic fish to eat, such as the alewife. And, yeah, so we've gone from this, an invasive species of what are we going to do, to now being so dependent, a billion-dollar industry in the salmon fishery here in the Great Lakes.
You know, and the other thing people don't realize, too, speaking with David A. Rose here in Wild Michigan, David, is the European carp we have in our river systems was brought over as a food source for the people moving here.
Yeah, I mean, carp were not native to the Americas.
No, you know, they weren't.
That common carp that we see in the rivers and all that kind of stuff. You know, in England, they love to fish for them. They're like, you know, on the holy grail of fish, you know, on the other side of the world. But here, they're common, and we call them the common carp. And, yeah, they were not from here. There's actually, I really studied this for some articles and stuff like that. There are very few native fish here in Michigan. Even walmouth, and I mean, smallmouth were always here. Some walmouth, that's really expanded. Even brook trout. We think brook trout, the native fish of Michigan, right? That's the Michigan state fish, brook trout. But here at the 45th parallel, Traverse City area, they weren't the common fish here. You know, back in the day, there was Arctic char, which is part of the same family. You know, you have a brook trout as a char, just such as a lake trout as a char. But, even our brook trout were kind of introduced into more southern regions than what they were, you know, Mother Nature had.
Yeah, it's just, what has always been the norm in our lives, me being born in 66, prior to that, a lot of this wasn't here. I mean, we had lake trout. That was, if I'm correct, the native fish.
Yeah, lake trout was the native fish. Like I said, there was some smallmouth bass, herring maybe, that kind of thing. But, yeah, it's... We talk, you know, a brown trout fishery. You think about the Asabo River and the Hex Hatch and all that. Well, brown trout aren't native. You know, they came from Germany, and they were stocked in the Pierre Marquette River in the late 1800s, and they even tried before that, you know. Atlantic salmon, they've been trying to stock Atlantic salmon since the late 1700s here in Michigan, up in the Sioux. And that's how the smelt got here. Smelt are not native. Smelt were stocked as a food source for Atlantic salmon. So, yeah, it's amazing how many fish that we fish for every day that are not, they're not from here.
No, you ain't from around here, are you? Sorry. It was all I could do to...
Yeah, y'all ain't from here, yeah.
It was all I could do to ask you to not ask you to cut down a shrubbery with a herring, but I at least had to go with the ain't from around here. Man, this show's gotten out of hand. But literally, what I really enjoy about these conversations, and I have a lot of listeners tell me firsthand, is that, yes, this is an outdoors show, but it's not the where are the fish biting, what's the water temperature. It's not a fishing report show. We talk about, I think, everything but that. And it's a lot of cool information that I love sharing.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I really enjoy my outdoor, you know, my career as an outdoor writer and stuff like that, is just studying this stuff and really talking to people that know a heck of a lot more than I do. And, you know, I get the lowdown. I get the skinny of, you know, what was native, what wasn't native, how things have become what they are. And I it's really fascinating. And I hope every outdoor oriented person out there, whether they're hunters, anglers, even kayakers, whatever, you know, just understand that, you know, this we're in a change, we're in a flux. I mean, it's just, everything is changing in the Great Lakes and the Inland Lakes, and nothing is what it originally was.
No, I mean, when you have shipping and everything else that, you know, all these things are attaching themselves to, or are being, you know, in ballast water and things of that nature, yeah, it's going to make a huge change, and it has made a huge change, but it hasn't always been for the worse.
No, it hasn't always been for the worse, you know, and we dealt with gobies, for an example, but, you know, and so there's pluses, you know, the smallmouth bass and the walleye and all that, and even the lake trout, they love to eat gobies. It's a good, you know, healthy food source. But at the same time, those same gobies, when a fish spawns, like a smallmouth or a lake trout or like that, those gobies will come in and eat the eggs. So, I mean, it's there's a, you know, plus and minus to every one of these invasive species.
Yeah, and I want to focus on a plus real quick. It's caused the industry to change what it does as well. We now have goby-colored plastics. We now have goby-looking lures. So, you know, I mean, that was a smart thing to do, is jump on the new trend, right? Just to help our economy above the waterline kind of grow.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, when it comes to the fishing industry, for example, I mean, when things change in the fishery, well, the lures change, and the whole, you know, the whole marketing changes. And yeah, it's all part of the important everything. I just, yeah.
It's all very cyclical. Well, David, as always, man, thank you so much for joining us and giving us your information. And like you said, everybody that comes on this show knows a hell of a lot more than I do, but you guys make me look good.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to say, hey, you know, if Richard's listening, I've got to hang with Richard there at the Michigan Outdoor Writers Association conferences and stuff like that, and I'm looking forward to his new book.
I'm already perused it. I love it. And again, folks, if you want to find your own copy, Schuler Books in Meridian Mall or online, richardpsmith.com. David A. Rose, wildfishing.com is where you can find him. David, as always, thank you. Hang on, I'll talk to you off air. Thanks to our friends at Not Just Guns. Thanks to our friends at Conquest Sense. And thank you, everybody, for listening. More coming your way here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.